strange. I have no soul, yet I feel compassion. It doesn't make sense, does it?
Why do kids make me sick?
Oh, please, use my body to keep you alive.
Drugs. Often the introduction comes in the form of a goofball.
Paula, I may be a bitch, but I'll never be a butch.
You know better than the girl who sells herself to a man. You're worse. And now, little Miss Puckett, she's troubled, and she's all outraged, birch.
I have a drug here, LSD. Perhaps you've heard of it.
Down inside, you're dirty. Do you hear me? Dirty.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Something Weird This Way Comes. I am Mo, and with me, as always, is that cuddly Canadian, your friend and mine, Mr. Roo.
Oh, you're so nice. How's it going today?
It's going great. I mean, you know, we've got a great movie to talk about, and you know, it's going to be a fun time.
Totally. I'm going to just say right off the bat that I actually really enjoyed this movie. So, not to let anyone down out there that might have been expecting like us to start bitching and moaning, but it was a pretty good flick.
This podcast comes from a place of love.
Yes, totally. I mean, like,
yeah, no, seriously. This is you're absolutely right. This is a great movie, and that's weird for me to say because this is. Well, let's get it right out of the way. The movie we're talking about today is The Body Beneath. Now, The Body Beneath is from the director Andy Milligan. Andy Milligan is the worst director in the history of mankind. You know, like people like to say, oh, Ed Wood. You know, like the people who say that Ed Wood is the worst director of all time, I say to them, you've never seen an Andy Milligan film because his films are fucking awful. Now, that being said, The Body Beneath is his best movie.
Well, if it's his best, it's a good best. I mean, like, I actually do enjoy some Ed Wood movies, which I guess gives you
an
idea to my character, right?
Yeah.
So I love Ed Wood movies, and I did enjoy this movie a lot. I'm very interested in seeing some of his Andy Milligan's bad movies now.
Oh, well, in that case, I recommend Fleshpot on 42nd Street.
Well, the name's just great, so so that's good already. But yeah, this was a good movie, and it had a lot for us to talk about, actually. It's nothing like a nudist camp film, that's for sure.
You know, well, nothing goes on in a nudist camp movie, you know, whereas with The Body Beneath, this is like 100% exposition, so there's a lot to talk about.
Cool. So shall we do a quick synopsis here?
Yeah, let's get right into it. You want to do that?
Yeah, sure. I'll just do it quickly, because it's actually, despite all the meat and potatoes in the movie, it's a pretty quick synopsis, which is that a family of vampires is inbred and is seeking new blood to extend their line. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. That's essentially the story. Yeah, so we've got the Reverend Algernon Ford, played by the brilliant Gavin Reed, who's easily the best character in the film. I mean, Gavin Reed is a real kind of fascinating dude, and he does a really great job, you know, playing this otherwise ridiculous character.
Oh, the character's ridiculous. He does a really good job at just being bizarre. Like, it's one of the first things I thought when the movie was going on is, everyone in Britain weird? Because, like, this guy, obviously, like, the film is very British, and the actors are very British.
I think this was actually filmed in Long Island.
What?
Yeah.
But that makes no sense.
I could be wrong, but yeah. I think this was filmed in Long Island.
That's hilarious. If it was, still, it's a very British film.
Oh, yeah.
Algernon Ford, he's a very interesting character in that he's obviously a reverend. He's an amateur, or at least even professional.
At least he plays one on TV.
He plays one on TV. He's a genealogist, or at least is obsessed with his family line.
I love that. Yeah, that's such a great line, like early on in the film, where he goes, you know, in my spare time, I like to study the family.
Yeah, I like to study the family. I'm very good at it.
I know everything, dear boy. In my spare time, which is little, I do extensive research into our family background. I also do horoscopes as well. Now, you are a Pisces, aren't you?
Yes, but how can you tell?
I'm good at a lot of things.
And also, he's an astrologist, which doesn't really apply much to much in a movie, except when he is able to guess. Well, not guess. He knows everybody's sign.
Yeah.
Pisces or whatever they happen to be, which is basically the opening sequence, aside from the very opening sequence. The opening sequence with dialogue is him talking to a guy about his family line and astrology.
Yeah, because it opens up, we've got what was the character at the beginning? Graham, right?
Graham, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got Graham Ford and the Reverend Ford knocks on his door and, you know, lets him know, oh, hey, you know, we're related.
Graham Ford.
I beg your pardon.
I'm looking for Graham Ford.
Yes, that's me.
Oh, allow me to introduce myself. I'm the Reverend Alexander Algernon Ford, my wife, Felicia. We're related, you know.
No, I didn't know.
Well, we are, not closely, but near. Would you mind terribly if we came in? It's rather drafty out here.
Well, please do.
But, you know, but I love how he's like, you know, but you're you know, you're not entirely related. You're only half related. Mm-hmm.
And not just that, he takes a little dig at him. He's talking about, the Reverend Ford is talking about how he actually just came there from Ireland. Mm-hmm. And then he turns to the guy and says, you're Canadian, which was just weird and out of the blue. And then he makes a statement, it's a lovely place to leave from. You being a Canadian should appreciate that.
It's a lovely place to leave from. You being Canadian would appreciate that.
So there's this little dig that Canada's a lovely place to leave. Right at the beginning of the movie. So it drew me in right away.
Well, I can agree with that.
Well,
I can. I've only been to Canada once and you know, I enjoyed leaving from there.
Well, we'll do it right next time.
No, there was I went to a strip club up there and had a grand old time. And
oh, Mo. Wah, 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 wah.
I'll never learn.
You will never learn. So, Graham Algernon, basically the story starts that Algernon is looking for people to come to his abbey, Carfax Abbey. Specifically, Graham's wife, I believe. Or am I getting that character mixed up with a different one? He wants both of them to show up?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
Sorry, I was lighting my pipe.
Ah, gotcha. It's pipe time.
It's always pipe time in the porn house.
I wanted to get some nice audio of the pipe going there.
Oh.
So, Graham, actually, one thing about Graham, he's basically how I expect every British person to be after watching, like, Britcoms and British movies. He's kind of flat, and he has that, like, perfect British accent where he sounds both above you and confused at all times. And it's great.
Yeah.
Almost all of his lines are delivered in this, well, what do you mean? Pardon
me. He's like He's a pompous twit.
Yeah, very much. A pompous twit, but with no real reason to be, because he's not that interesting.
And he's also not British. He's Canadian.
He's Canadian. So it's lying from the beginning, really.
Right from the get-go.
Another thing that starts right from the beginning that the audience should check out when they watch this film is the framing of that Andy Milligan uses when he's framing his scenes. I noticed this, and a couple of my friends noticed this. It's atrocious. And although the movie is very interesting to watch, what I found most interesting was the fact that the majority of it took place in the bottom corners, while you could see the wall and the ceiling. And there's a great scene in the very opening point where basically you see the top of the backs of the Reverend and his wife Alicia's head. Mm-hmm. And Graham's kind of framed in it off to the side, but it looks awful. It's like, for some reason, he's decided to hide the majority of what's going on and show you the walls instead.
Yeah, well, fact, Andy Milligan is a bad director, and he's a worse cinematographer, so, yeah. So the fact that the characters are even on the screen at all is kind of amazing.
And there are a few moments where they aren't. There are a few moments where they walk off and the camera kind of jerks to catch up to them. Or if you go to our Facebook, you'll see I snapped a couple of shots because of the framing. There's a great one where later on when the Reverend's getting a transfusion, it all takes place in like the bottom right corner of the screen. And by bottom right corner, I don't mean like that quarter. I mean like it's stuck in the corner of the frame. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's some pretty wild scenes with him, you know, when he gets those blood transfusions. I'm thinking of one particular, like, I think it's the last one that they show him getting, where I guess he starts having an issue with his blood pressure, so they stick a bunch of leeches on him to try to, like, even it out. But the thing I noticed about the leeches was that they didn't look like leeches. Like, they looked like he was covered in shit.
Yeah, they were, like, strips of, like, almost see-through brown rubber or something.
Yeah. And like, because, you know, leeches are black, you know, they're not brown. And so it literally looked like he was just smeared from head to toe with shit.
We have a picture of that on our Facebook as well.
Oh, that's good.
Definitely, because, like, those leeches were great.
Leeches.
So I think we at the beginning we mentioned that the Reverend's a vampire. The Ford family for 21 generations has been vampires.
He's so obsessed with the lineage, and like he keeps mentioning how, you know, like the family's been around since like 98 BC, and
they've been in that cemetery since 98 BC. They've 21 generations of Fords. They're getting weak, however, because they're inbreeding. So
No, the exact opposite. They're getting weak because they're not inbreeding.
Interesting. I got that backwards watching it.
Yeah. No. He's pissed off. Like, that's why he was so angry about the guy being Canadian. Is because he's pissed off because they're thinning out the bloodline.
I gotcha. That's so funny. That went over my head. I was like, it seemed like he was pissed off because of inbreeding. I was kind of hoping that's why everybody looked green, that it was sort of, they were getting these, like, genetic problems with
That's probably the case. I mean, as far as those three, like, super green women, who knows what's going on with them. I just assumed that they had really bad skin and had to wear a face mask, you know, those overnight face masks all day. But
yeah, the Reverend kind of has, I guess, I don't know if they're his vampire assistants or I don't know, but on occasion three very green ladies will appear and help him out. Generally, they just walk in, scare people, and leave.
Yeah, they don't really do much of anything.
I think there's
one point where I think they kill somebody, but really, it's just, I mean, they're just there to, like, stand in the background and scare people occasionally, and
They're not really scary. One girl comes equipped with chloroform in one scene, but aside from that, they just pretty much walk around and people get scared and somebody tells them to leave, so they head out. That
seems to be how it works. Yeah, they come walking in. The person who they're trying to scare gets scared, and then Algernon tells them to leave.
I guess that's sort of British frights. I don't know. Another thing, I guess, like, we'll just move on a bit in the plot.
Sure.
Immediately after that opening scene, when we're sort of introduced to general idea, the non-vampire characters do not yet know about the vampires, though. They just think there's a reverend that wants them to drop by the abbey. It's followed up by, if I never see another British sex scene in my life, I'll be fine.
I thought you would have enjoyed that sex scene. There's a lot of man ass.
There was a lot of man ass, which I appreciated, but it was awkward man ass.
And there was a lot of Paul did not seem very happy, you know, being naked in that scene.
I know that, like, for a fact in this case that the actor is heterosexual, but I don't know. There was something really awkward. It kind of reminded me of The Room, sex scenes in The Room, where, like, it's really not good to look at, and the music does not fit what's going on. It has nothing to do with the plot, really. Yeah.
Especially in The Room.
Yeah. And then immediately after, I don't know if you noticed, but after the scene, they fade to black and fade back in on the happy couple, and there's some post-coital jazz playing.
Yep.
This is jazz, and they sit and they have the most disjointed conversation.
Darling.
Yes.
I love you.
I know that.
That wasn't what I wanted to say.
I don't think you could say any more.
Seriously, darling, I want to tell you something. I don't know where to begin.
Do you want a cigarette?
Mm-mm, I don't think so.
Well?
Well, what?
I'm waiting.
I love you, Paul.
I know that. Hey, you're serious, aren't you?
I've never been more serious in my life.
I think I know what it is.
You know me that well?
Hmm. After 2 years, I should.
Well, what is it?
You're pregnant.
You do know me that well. Are you upset by it?
A year ago, maybe. But not now. We can afford it, you know.
It's not an it. It's a baby.
We don't know what it is yet.
It's either a boy or a girl.
All right, which?
You know I can't tell.
Then it's an it.
I love you.
I know that.
Which keeps appearing in the film. There are a lot of very disjointed conversations, and I must say that was pretty much one of my favorite parts of this movie. The conversations were so bizarre.
Yeah, there's a lot of bizarre talking.
Like, the girl turns to the man right after the sex scene, is like, "Darling, I love you. That isn't what I meant to say." And then they go on this whole thing, which keeps coming back. It's almost like it reminded me of a play. I don't know if you've... I'm going to get all academic here, but there's a Norwegian play called The Cherry Orchard, where people just kind of have this weird dialogue back and forth, very matter-of-fact stuff.
The next groove on this record has been electronically engineered by some of the world's finest craftsmen to bring to your homes the full, glorious spectacle of Gumby Theatre.
Theatre comes live tonight from the Yvonne Gumby Theatre near Guildford. L.D. Gumby, M.J. Gumby and R.S. Gumby star in The Cherry Orchard by Anton Chekhov. The action takes place near Moscow in the 1870s. Ilya Natayevska and Mariana Plyankov await news of their stepbrother Trofimov. For radio by putting it onto a piece of wood and banging a few nails through it. Mr. L.N. Gumby is now appearing in the Thames near Wapping Steps, and Mr. D.P. Gumby is appearing as a central tunnel support on the new Victoria line. And now, book at bedtime. This week's book is The House at Pooh Corner.
That's sort of what I got, very disjointed matter-of-fact dialogue. Except in this case, it started with sex and ended with them rolling around on the carpet. So I guess that's the magic of Andy Milligan.
There's definitely something magical about Milligan.
Sweet.
If you can say that.
Well, I think we just did. And somebody's going to quote us, so it's too late now.
Oh, man. So we've got Susan and Paul. Now, Susan is really the female lead in this film. You know, like, the problem with Andy Milligan is he doesn't really know, like, how to introduce characters correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So we're introduced to Graham and his wife first, who are very minor characters in the film. In fact, Graham's only in the movie for 2 scenes. You know, his wife's really only in the movie for 3.
Mm-hmm.
And all they're there for is to show that, you know, that Algernon got to the wife, and she helps him kill the husband, essentially.
Yeah, they sort of pop, like, somewhere at the beginning, and then somewhere maybe a third or halfway through the movie. We return to them just in time for her to show that she is a vampire. Actually, there was a great piece of dialogue just before she killed him, before he went off to take his bath, where she's looking out the window and she's talking about the moon, and then she asks if he wants to take a bath. I don't know, it was just weird. And
well, she goes, you know, do you want to take your bath first tonight, or shall I? And he goes, no. He says something really ridiculous, and like, that's a deviation from the standard.
Yeah, he was like, oh God, what was the line? That's an abrupt change.
Yeah, that's an abrupt change.
So that was great. That's really those two characters. They were there to entertain us at the beginning and entertain us halfway through, and that was about it.
Yeah.
Susan and Paul.
Susan is the female. Susan's the female lead. Paul is. I mean, he's not the male lead, but I mean, he's the you know, he's your boyfriend. He's, you know, the hero character, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. He's sort of the hero character, the one that's there to try to make things save the day later on, but for now
a sad, pathetic loser of a hero type character, because he fails every single time.
and he admits it when he does, which is great. It's such a like an honest sort of Britishness to it. It's like, oh, I fucked up again.
Yeah. Oh, those Long Island Brits. what?
Yeah, exactly. And where am I? I'm a little disjointed right now.
we're talking about Susan and Paul and their relation to the Reverend.
Yes, and after the sex scene, Susan heads over to the Abbey.
Well, there's some really great like post-coitus, like horrible conversation. I mean, we had just sort of mentioned this, but like after that, he starts talking about how, you know, should he come with her,
Yeah.
And she's like, no, you have a painting to finish. You know, you finish your painting. You know, besides, if you come, we'll just spend the entire time having sex. You know, and I'm thinking about, and it was like at that moment that you think to yourself, please stay home. Please stay home.
And we're lucky because he does.
Yeah, and they talk a lot. I mean, they talk a lot about sex, and then we find out that Susan's pregnant.
Yeah, and he guesses it. Like, he knew it. He's like, I know something. Oh, what do you know? Well, I don't know if I want to tell you. Well, are you going to tell me? I might get around to it. What is it? You're pregnant. How did you know? It's just this neat sort of another thing that it sort of reminded me of was the awkward conversations between Bruce Willis and the French chick in Pulp Fiction. That's sort of like, they both, except in this case, they're both kind of like the French chick. So there's nobody who's sort of the intelligent part of the conversation. It's just these two people that are bouncing words back at each other.
And that's Andy Milligan for you. Well, go ahead. Go on to the next bit. I want to talk about the next bit, because in the next scene we get introduced to the maid.
The maid,
you know,
yes.
Who has the worst Cockney accent ever. And it disappears. She only has the accent for one scene. In the rest of the movie, any other time you see her, it's gone. But she has this really, like, brilliantly bad Cockney accent for one scene. And like, really the only note I could write down was the maid has the worst Cockney accent, ha 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 ha. You know, it's just, I mean, it's so fucking bad.
I thought she was great. Now, I agree, she had the
She's not a bad actress, you know, so to speak. I mean, she's terrible at accents, but, you know,
she's terrible at accents. She, her character really flits up and down. It's what I liked most about her was how she normally answers the door. So the maid answers the door, and there are a couple of great door discussions that go on. Specifically later when she answers the door for Paul, she has this sort of quick discussion where she's, it's almost like theatrical, because he's like, is Susan here? No, she's not. Have you seen her? No, like, it's just, I'm trying to, I'm fucking it up.
Yes?
Is this Carfax Abbey?
Yes.
Is Miss Susan Ford here?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Was she here yesterday?
Yes, and Miss Ford came here yesterday, but she left that same afternoon.
Well, she hasn't returned home, and I was worried about her.
Well, I'm very sorry, sir. She isn't here. Good day.
Don't try to do a male and female voice in a British accent when you're Canadian without one.
Yep.
Sweet. I'm trying to find where I am.
All
right. I'm very disjointed right now. I don't know why.
That's all right.
So. I don't know if the movie might have ruined us.
I think it did. I think it broke your brain.
I think it broke my brain. I have, like, I just have so many notes about it, and as I start to sort of discuss it, I think my brain turns into Andy Milligan mode, and my dialogue gets broken. You know what, let's start with Susan arrives. The maid is awesome, and then she meets Spool. Sort of meets Spool. Spool basically runs in, laughs at her, and runs out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very odd scene. You know, like, I mean, you don't really know what to think of it. Like, they're almost kind of introducing Spool as, like, sort of an evil character, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you're not supposed to know what to think of him, you know? And, I mean, and of course, that couldn't be farther from the truth. He's actually one of the most, like, sensitive characters in the film. But,
Make him sort of, like, the evil hunchback assistant.
Exactly.
In,
like, yeah,
he's supposed to be, like...
Yeah, he's supposed to be like an Igor type, and then he becomes this big softy, you know. But the thing we forgot to mention before, yeah, Susan shows up at the house, you know, and she's early. She's, you know, like, they weren't expecting her until like 10:30 or whatever they said. And that's sort of where, you know, where you start to see, you know, that there's something wrong with, you know, with the Reverend and his wife, because, you know, they're in bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why they weren't downstairs. And you're like, oh, okay, well, something's obviously, because they haven't really gone into too much detail as to what's happening at this point yet. But this is like the first, like, clue as to what's up with the Reverend and his wife, who we need to mention, because
Alicia.
Yeah, because she doesn't talk.
My wife, Alicia. I must tell you, Susan, that my wife is not very demonstrative. She confides everything to me, and I explain it to others. It's a most annoying habit to strangers, but I'm so used to it, I sometimes forget to explain it. You will forgive her, won't you?
She's got the easiest role in the entire film. She's just, all she has to do is skulk behind Algernon and whisper in his ear every now and again.
And it's always like the stage direction is always given by Algernon. He's always saying, you know, go do this or something. So really, the actress didn't have to learn anything. She didn't have to remember a damn thing.
Yeah. So she sits down in the study and starts, you know, poking through things, because that's what you do when you're in a stranger's house. And this very oddball hunchback character kind of like runs into the room, starts laughing maniacally, and then just runs out.
Mm. We have a snapshot of that on our Facebook. I tried to get a nice shot of Spool, but it's weird. Our introduction to him is like a couple of things in this movie, actually. The first time you see a character doesn't really set the tone for the character for the rest of the movie. They change.
Yeah.
And Spool is the best example of that, because when he first came in, I didn't actually expect that he'd even be one of those people that could, you know, speak English or anything like that. He'd just kind of make noise grunts and
yeah, you kind of shit. Exactly. You kind of expect him to be like, you know, like for the whole movie. And yeah, and he turns out to be, you know, like I said, he turns out to be a great big softy. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah. Probably the nicest guy in the whole movie.
Yeah, one of the very few redeeming characters in the entire film.
Mm-hmm. After Spool, I guess, checks out Susan, runs out, the Reverend does show up and goes right back into genealogy. He's very happy that Paul is, sort of happy. Paul is of good, strong blood, because he's British of Italian descent.
And what nationality is he?
English, of Italian descent.
Ah, good, strong blood. You came from good, strong blood at one time.
Ah.
Because he keeps an eye on that kind of stuff, too. But we eventually get up to one of the best lines when they bring in the wine.
Yeah, they decide to toast with sherry.
Yes, so they toast with sherry, which is actually, they come in with what they say is tomato juice.
Yeah, it really looks like that they're, like anybody who's familiar with this style of movie will know what I'm talking about, but back in, like, this era, like the, well, I mean, this is actually probably about 10 years later, but like the late 60s, early 70s, you know, they used to use what they would call Technicolor blood, and that's what the stuff looks like. It looks like they're drinking a glass of Technicolor blood. It's It's, I mean, obviously for the Reverend and his wife, it's supposed to be blood, but they call it tomato juice.
Yes.
But her drink is the exact same color.
Yeah.
You know, it's opaque. You know, it's not, you know, it's not clear like Sherry is. You know, and you know, and it's this weird orange color. It's not red.
It really stands out. It's like
it's blood. It's a really weird looking drink, but you're right. The best line that they rip off Dracula directly, you know, and they said, and they go, oh, is that wine? They go, no, we never drink wine at this hour.
Religious reasons.
Aren't you having any sherry? We never drink wine at this hour. Religious reasons.
What's that?
Tomato juice. Here's to your future, my dear.
You know, but the whole, yeah, we never drink wine is just a blatant Dracula ripoff.
But I do love the fact that he adds a little tag. It's, we never drink wine at this hour, religious reasons. Sort of like a little hee-hee sort of thrown at the audience.
Exactly.
Before she collapses, because obviously they're drugging her.
Because
mm-hmm. We wouldn't want her to get away. Which then gets to the part that it gets explained, but it completely threw me off. It was like, so the next scene, we discover that Algernon needs blood transfusions.
Yeah.
He feels better after them. In fact, his line is, I feel better. I can feel the blood flowing through my veins. He's very overdramatic. I love that line, just the way he delivers it.
I feel better. I can feel the blood flowing through my veins.
But they need blood transfusions to face the day. Whether that means just in general they need it for energy and to be awake, or whether they need it for the sunlight, they need to face the daylight.
Yeah, Milligan's not that clever. I'm fairly certain that he was quite literal in the sense. I think he meant, you know, like they need it to be able to go out in daylight.
Okay.
I wish that we didn't have to face the sunlight. Someone has to do it, and it might as well be me.
So they need blood transfusions to face the daylight. And this is the scene I was talking about earlier. The framing in it is ridiculous. Most of it takes place in the bottom right corner of the screen,
mm-hmm.
which is great if you're a wall enthusiast.
I am.
Yeah, well, good. So you probably really love the scene.
I love the entire movie. there's a lot of really great walls. You know, like I was really happy in scene 36 with they showed a nice shot of a load bearing wall. And I said, man, that thing could probably hold up a good couple of tons.
Headboards too, and ceilings. I think if you like walls, you should like ceilings.
Oh, and headboards. I like footboards too, but not as much.
Not as much. Sweet. Oh, and this scene also has the gayest line in the whole movie. Now Milligan, from what I read, was kind of gay.
Well, yeah, his most famous movie is this movie called Vapors, which is supposed to be like the first underground film shot entirely in a homosexual location.
Oh, fancy that!
If you get the DVD, if you get the Something Weird DVD for The Body Beneath, there's a trailer for Vapors. It's the worst trailer in the history of trailers, but basically it's just like it's still shots from the movie, but it's just they freeze framed on like the gayest shots they could find of these obviously not gay men, you know. You know, and it's all like really like stereotype stuff, like limp wrist stuff, and like, you know, they're making like crazy faces, and you know, there's one scene where like I think a dude's wearing like a tennis skirt, and like one guy's like pulling it up, you know.
I have to see this movie.
It's a really ridiculous movie, but yeah, Andy Milligan did a lot of work with what would be considered gay material.
And it sort of comes out in this movie. I personally believe that the Reverend kind of comes across as a little gay.
Oh, he comes across as very gay. Yeah,
no, sort of has foppish thing. But when he...
I think he was going for fop, but he comes off as flaming.
Yes, and he gets really pissed off at Spool in this scene because he asks for a robe, but Spool brings the wrong robe. He wanted
the red robe.
And the outburst was amazing. It was really gay. Yeah, it was perfect.
Yeah.
Also, I'd like to note at this point that Spool is an amazing name for a character. The only thing that I can think of that's like on par as Torgo, which is funny because they're both very similar characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And on occasion, a sort of a Torgo element comes out of Spool, just the way he speaks. But yeah, I loved Spool.
Actually, I want to throw a quick plug out there. This week on the projection booth, they're actually doing Manos the Hand of
Fate. Oh, really? Awesome.
Yeah.
Check that out for sure. I'm really excited. And also, I guess, another shout out. If you look up the Manos in HD site, there's a guy who's currently going through the process of remastering Manos. When we get around to that, when that comes out, I'm pretty sure we'll be talking about it. So
well, there's a big Kickstarter page, I believe, for all of that, the Manos thing. And I haven't donated yet, but I plan to.
I plan to as well. Because we're going to have to, because that's going to be our big show. We're going to have, like, what, a 10-parter? Manos.
Yeah, Manos is going to be a big one.
Sweet. So poor Spool. Spool gets in trouble, and then we actually jump to the scene where we see that Spool is actually kind of a sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
After that, that's when Spool goes to bring food to Susan, who has just awoken from being drugged. And it's sort of like, I think Spool wants to be her friend. He looks like he wants to be nice to her, but he can't because he knows he'll get in trouble.
Yeah.
This is where Spool's character as an Igor kind of breaks down, and he kind of comes across more like a British schoolboy kind of a thing.
I brought you some food.
Eat. You must eat some food.
I'm not hungry.
Eat.
Why are you keeping me here?
If you want some more food, pull this.
I asked you a question.
I'm not supposed to talk to you. Hit me if I talk to you.
Who? The Reverend?
I've got to go now.
Wait! I want to go back to something real quick because actually, right before this is the scene where Graham's wife drugs him. Literally right before this scene, and I just wanted to mention one thing real quick. Dude. Like we mentioned that his wife opens up the window and the vampires and Algernon come in, but Algernon has a line in this scene that's so great. Like I totally forgot to mention it. He goes, I want him dead. Take every last drop of his blood. He's no good to us.
Yes.
And just the way he says that is so fucking great. Yeah.
Kill him.
Yeah.
Kill him.
I want him dead. All right, now back to what you were saying.
Yeah, so Spool is being really sweet. He's actually kind of well-spoken, mm-hmm. actually. He wants to help Susan, but he's interrupted by the three blue ladies, green ladies, whatever color, who come in, kind of scare him away. And then Algernon appears in his red robe. And he's really campy when he walks in. He's pissed off that the blue ladies are attacking
Susan. So over the top, yeah.
He's like, no, and sends them all out, which is great because it draws your attention to him just before he does the big reveal to Susan, which is ridiculously upfront. It's very, but that's his character, right? His character's like, I have something to tell you. Sit down.
I must explain their behavior. I have quite a few things to explain to you.
Why are you keeping me here?
If you are patient, Susan, and listen to what I tell you, then perhaps you will understand. Spool, you may leave. I said leave. I told you yesterday that we were related. Well, we are related in more ways than your imagination would allow. You see, Susan, my wife and I have lived for a number of centuries. It's true, my dear. Little do you realize that the Forts have, for generation upon generation, been vampires. Alicia and I have the privilege of being reborn, so to speak. Every 40 years, we return here to All Souls Church. Of course, we look different each time out of necessity. As you'll soon see.
What have I got to do with this?
You're a very sensible girl, as I thought yesterday when we met. And my feelings are never wrong.
But what has all this got to do with me?
I'm coming to that, Susan. But I don't want to frighten you. You're in a very delicate condition. And very, very important to us.
Us? You mean you and your wife?
No, my dear, by us. I mean the whole Ford clan.
I don't understand.
You know, of course, that the Fords have been buried in Highgate Cemetery since 98 BC.
No, I didn't know.
The Fords have always been a strong clan, until the last century. Unfortunately, they've been dissipating the direct line by intermarriage. You, Susan, are the only hope of saving the clan from eventual extinction.
What do you mean?
We want your baby.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you got to move the story along somehow, and usually that takes place with Algernon saying, I've got something to tell you, sit down.
Sit down. Yeah. By the way, you may have noticed I talk about our family a lot. We're vampires. And then there's sort of a little bit of a runaround before he gets to the point with her, basically that he wants her baby.
I want you to make us babies.
Yes, we want your baby. And I thought that was great. There was, I don't know, that scene was like, it was weird because it was like, it was so much exposition. It was, in fact, Susan keeps trying to interrupt him. But she keeps saying, wait, I have more to say. Just sort of continues on.
I'm not quite done yet. I also want to mention that not only do we want your baby, we want you to breed with others of us and have more babies. he just keeps going on about, like, you know, like he has this grand scheme plan. For some reason, he thinks that she's going to go along with it. You know, like, oh, yeah, a family of vampires. And you want us, you want me to have sex with you and have your vampire babies? Okay, sure. No, I mean,
anything for a Ford.
Yeah, you know.
And on top of that, it's like, it's extra creepy. Yeah. Because he's gone through the speech, and like, and it's obvious, like, one of the other cool quirks of Algernon's character is that he always has a plan. Yeah. Like, he's got a plan, and he wants to see it through, and if something interrupts a plan, it's like, damn it, I have to come up with another plan. But part of his plan, while she was unconscious, he says to her, while you were unconscious, we examined you.
Yeah, that's
and
creepy.
It's such a creepy line.
It really is creepy.
She eventually passes out, and he does, like, the most awkwardly slow vampire neck bite. It's really awkward. His jaw's kind of cocked to the side. I grabbed a screenshot of that in our Facebook, so if anybody wants to see just how weird this looks.
Yep. And what is the address for our Facebook?
Oh, yeah, so you go. Facebook.com/somethingweirdpodcast.
Huzzah.
And if you just search for Something Weird, This Way Comes Up, it should come up right away. This Way Comes Up. Could be that. Sweet. So we're getting to Paul's entrance soon, aren't we?
Yeah. I believe that's the very next thing that happens.
And this is where Paul has his quick back and forth discussion with the maid.
Yes.
Is this Carfax Abbey?
Yes.
Is Miss Susan Ford here?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Was she here yesterday?
Yes, and Miss Ford came here yesterday, but she left that same afternoon.
Well, she hasn't returned home, and I was worried about her.
Well, I'm very sorry, sir. She isn't here. Good day.
Yeah, the maid is so surly. Yeah. Like she's so angry with him, you know. And then she does. I mean, like, she's like, well, she's not here. She left last night.
Yeah, and it's like this bam, 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 bam conversation. Really, yeah. Really back and forth. She shuts the door, and I got the impression at that point that she was like just a bitch, but it's immediately followed by her not happy that she had to say all that shit at the door. She like,
yeah, like she felt so bad about it, you know, and that's really funny. I mean, like,
I don't like lying, sir.
I beg your pardon.
I don't like lying.
What do you mean? All right, girl, what do you mean?
Please, sir, you're hurting my arm.
Speak.
I didn't see her leave the house. I think she's still here.
Like, if she felt bad about it, like, why did she say it in the first place, you know?
She gets confronted by Algernon.
It's like one of those guys who beats their wife and then, like, feels bad about it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in this case, she doesn't like, I guess, turning people away at the door.
Yeah. But she doesn't like lying.
She doesn't like lying, yeah.
Yeah.
And Algernon kind of confronts her on it and delivers probably the harshest line of the movie, where he says, "Are you questioning my authority, you infernal little slut?" I mean, to this poor maid who hasn't been slutty at all.
"Are you questioning my authority, you impertinent little slut? I want you out of here within 1 hour. Do you understand? 1 hour."
Like, it's such a jab.
She does show a lot of leg.
I didn't notice.
I did.
I'm sure you did. You're going to have to always point that stuff out for me, because I might miss it. I'll talk about the man ass.
Not if I don't first.
Ah, damn it.
So he gives her 1 hour. You've got 1 hour to pack your stuff.
So she's been threatened, but that won't stop her. She basically leaves the house, and Paul at this point is trying to find his way in.
Yeah, and then right at this point, right when that stuff starts happening, there's this scene that's completely shoehorned in right here of this kind of cute redhead talking on the phone.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that.
and it's like, you know, there's no introduction to the character whatsoever. Yeah, you don't know who she is. She's never been seen before in the film yet. You know, like, this is her first moment in the film, and she's having this very awkward one-sided conversation. You know, which is one of my favorite things in these films, is when they have these awkward one-sided conversations, and you can only hear one half of it. Especially when the actress isn't very good and she's saying her lines so fast that there's no way in hell that anybody on the other end could be responding to it.
I think that's going to be a staple of this podcast, because the last movie, the Beast That Killed Women, was full of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. This was a great scene. I can't believe I forgot about it.
Yeah. But going off on a tangent for a second, we just got we should mention that Something Weird has provided us with some films, and we had mentioned in the Beast That Killed Women episode that probably the best nudist camp movie was Nude on the Moon, and they sent us a copy of that. You know, like, kind of like we didn't even ask for it. Like, that was one of the ones that they just sent to us, and so we're gonna do that one in the near future. But it's pretty wild.
Cool. I'm really looking forward to that one. I'm ironically looking forward to that one.
And that's a Doris Wishman. So, you know, so at the very least, it'll be, you know, better than average. So back to this, we got this redhead who's having a conversation on the phone. She gets a knock on her door, and she's like, "Oh, who could that be?" You know, and she goes and checks the door. There's nobody there. She turns around, and there's the three, you know, the three,
the blue ladies, whatever.
Yeah, the green faced women. And they kidnap her and bring her back to the Ivy. This is actually the scene where they chloroform.
Yeah, I love that one. The sort of larger of the green-faced ladies just kind of slowly approaches her with a big smile on her face, and she has a bottle of chloroform, which she's been clearly told to hold up and, like, towards the camera so that you see what it is. And another hand is, like, the cloth, which she... I don't know. If I was a redhead, I would have struggled a bit more. She just kind of holds her arms out beside her so that the green-faced lady has no problem getting the chloroform on her face.
Yeah.
But I guess she deserved to get kidnapped, so she did.
She was stupid enough to answer the door.
Exactly. Never do that.
So then we cut back, and Paul has snuck around to the backside of the Abbey, and he runs into the maid.
They're sort of an unlikely duo.
Yeah, this weird, unlikely duo. And so he and her break into the Abbey and decide they're going to try to save Susan.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
They're immediately caught.
Totally. They're immediately
caught. Just immediately.
They walk through the door, and it's like they take two steps. And they're in trouble. And then we get to... And they're not just caught. Like, Algernon kind of takes Paul out with a stick or something, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the camera goes wild. And that's when I discovered that there's this technique that Andy Milligan seems to use, where he likes to shake the camera around a bit. At first I thought he might have gotten smacked by whatever it was that Algernon was attacking Paul with. But, and then that is followed by a scene I actually didn't expect. The maid getting whacked with knitting needles, which was great. And the camera also went cray-cray in this scene where, like, right when it was Alicia, I believe, had the knitting needles, and she brings them down on the maid's face, and the camera starts swinging around like crazy while the music goes wild.
You know why? It's because, and particularly in a scene like that, because his effects are so bad that that he swings the camera around, so you can't really ever get a good look at what happened.
And it was kind of effective, actually, and it's one of the few moments in the movie where the music kind of suited what was going on screen. And then there's actually a fairly creepy sequence, like one of those things that only 60s and 70s horror movies can do, where like they have her with the needles in her eyes, mm-hmm. and she's being dragged out. And I don't know what it is, modern day, that they can't quite get that sort of 60s, 70s creep factor. Yeah. I actually was a little creeped out by the image of the maid with the things in her face being dragged away. So they did a pretty good job there.
I agree.
And it's followed by some post-murder Dixieland jazz, which is always cool.
I like to follow everything in my life by Dixieland jazz. You know, in fact, when we're done recording, I'm gonna pop on some Dixieland jazz. In fact, I'm gonna end this episode with Dixieland.
Oh, please do! I love Dixieland, so that's great.
Maybe I'll throw a little Bojack on there.
I love it. So we'll have a post. We should just have like post episode Dixieland jazz.
Although he's really more Zydeco, but
yeah. But you know what? They match. They're fine.
It works.
We find, I actually, at this point in the movie, I thought that Paul had been killed, but he's alive.
Yep.
I forgot to mention earlier also, Paul, for his rescue effort, wore this really cute knitted powder blue sweater.
I'm glad you mentioned the sweater, because I was going to, and I just didn't, I figured, you know, let the guy who's into that sort of thing, you know, mention that. But I really liked that sweater.
It's a good,
not the color, I'm not into powder blue, but that design I thought was good.
There's something that sort of, it looks like a grandma sweater, right? Like grandma knitted it for him.
Yeah.
Actually, now that I think about it, there's a lot
style,
of knitting.
That style, this. Yeah, that style of sweater has a specific name, and I can't remember what it is, but it's like, you know, I think they call it like a clan sweater or something
sort
like
of
that.
Textured knitted kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, it's a pretty big thing in, I don't know if it's Ireland or Scotland, but like the northern mm-hmm. half of the UK.
But like it's perfect wear for saving your girlfriend's life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's very fashionable.
So he's wearing this blue sweater. I noticed it prior, but it really stands out in his escape sequence. Mm-hmm. He's been tied up, put in a room, and there's about a 5 or 6 minute period where he tries to free himself. He breaks the glass and tries to cut the rope on the glass.
Well, he does something kind of clever. Like he grabs a blanket off of the, off of the couch, or I don't know if it's the couch or the bed, but whatever. He grabs a blanket and covers up the glass with it so that he can smash it. And of course, I found myself being the ridiculous human being that I am. The second he smashed it, I went Mazel Tov.
That's true. And he kind of smashes it with his feet.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of a cool scene. He spins around. It would have been, if it had been 30 seconds long, it would have been a very cool sort of A-Team MacGyver-like escape sequence. But
they could have like montaged that shit into like 3 shots.
But instead they go for about 5 or 6 minutes. And he cuts himself in the process. Which is always dangerous to do in a vampire house. Mm-hmm. But he sneaks his way out. And then we cut to Algernon. And Algernon, again, is in a room. Is he with the redhead at this point?
He's with the redhead.
And he's very obsessed with manners. He's offering her tea. And once again, we're brought to genealogy because he wants to talk to her about how they're related.
Yeah.
Would you like some tea?
No, thank you.
Come now, my dear. Have a cup of tea. Alicia, would you please?
Why have you brought me here?
That's a very long story, my dear, very long indeed, and I don't mean to go into it now. Do you know that we're related?
I should certainly hope not.
You're far too pretty, my dear, to make such nasty remarks. It contorts your face, leaves nasty lines here.
Don't touch me.
It would be far easier for all of us if you would conduct yourself in a more friendly manner.
He has some really weird mannerisms as well. in this scene, he starts playing with one of the green-faced lady's hair. Earlier on, when he was talking to Susan, he was like doing that whole nail, like he was looking at his nails and checking them. And, I don't know, these little mannerisms sort of came out. I couldn't tell if it was just like the character, or Gavin Reed, the actor who plays Algernon, just has these very sort of gay mannerisms of playing with women's hair and checking his nails, or if it was like Algernon's character.
No. But yeah, so we find out that Susan they want as a baby making factory essentially. Mm-hmm. Then we find out from the redhead, who I don't even think they ever say the character's name, do they?
No, I think this might be Anna.
I don't know. I don't really know. Yeah. So we'll just call her the redhead.
The redhead, yeah.
So we find out they want her for a very specific thing as well. She has very strong blood. Mm-hmm. So they want to use her as essentially as a blood bank. You know, they want to use her for blood transfusions.
Yeah, they seem to bring women in. Did he say? I think it was a 6 month. It's almost like a contract. She works for 6 months, and if she did a good job, then they will turn her into a vampire.
They'll make her immortal, yeah.
Yeah, so that's nice. So that's a good trade-off, I think. He also mentioned something earlier in the movie. I think he cycles through churches. He was last at this church 40 years before, and yeah, it's sort of interesting. I don't know. I thought it was interesting. He said he kind of cycles through churches. I wonder if he cycles through women as well. I don't know.
Well, I know I do.
You should write a book.
Please. Yeah, it'd be one page long. I was married once. I had kids. The end.
Thank you.
So at this point, Spool discovers that Paul is missing.
Yes.
And I mean, really, nothing really becomes of it. He just notices he's gone. And then we cut to the Reverend in bed covered in shit. I mean, leeches.
Leeches, yes.
And I think they talk briefly about how Paul's missing. And then we get back to the redhead again. And she's trying to get on Spool's good side, essentially, you know. And she gets Spool to explain in probably the only realistic and interesting, for that matter, bit of backstory in the entire film about how Spool hurt himself, you know, and how, like, he was the son from, I think he said it was his father's first marriage, you know, and then his father got remarried, and his stepmother and his, well, what he calls second mother, second brother,
yeah.
Yeah, would beat him up and ended up pushing him in front of a bus, and he broke his back in, like, 5 places, and they basically just left him to die, you know, and we find out that he's been with Algernon for 7 years now.
Yeah. Which it was kind of a sweet story, and it was Spool's moment, I guess. He got to sort of open up to somebody.
Yeah,
she's trying to convince him to help her escape,
and does.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're caught.
They're caught
immediately,
which seems to be a standard in this movie. Yeah. If you try to do anything, you're going to get caught real fast.
Yeah. They know what's going on in this abbey. Everybody does. And, you know,
they probably have cameras everywhere. They never really touched on it. I don't know. He seems to know what's going on.
And then they do something awful, and they nail Spool to a wall.
Yeah, sort of as punishment.
Yeah.
Which I guess he's not killed, but this is where the weird sort of element of this movie, where there's actually layers, this weird layer of sort of relationship going on, friendship between Spool and Algernon. So Spool gets punished, but he doesn't get killed.
And then Algernon has, and then like they're talking about it afterwards, and Algernon has this really ridiculous line. He goes, "It's strange, I have no soul, yet I feel compassion."
I'm truly sorry, Spool. It's actually kind of a nice thing where he's essentially admitting like he cares for Spool, but he doesn't really care for that much else.
Things are not going well. We are at the edge of trouble. We must change our plans. I have no further use for Miss Candace Ford. Kill her.
Yeah. And then the movie goes crazy.
Yes. Now, did I do acid or did the movie do acid at this point?
I'm fairly certain that Andy Milligan did acid at this point because the movie goes crazy.
Goes totally crazy, and it's totally unexpected. Everything is led up to this moment. And like I was when I was coming, I was like, okay, he's been mentioning the conference,
yeah,
and the feast.
Now keep in mind, this is like the last like 15 minutes of the movie,
yes,
you know, so it really just seems to me that like Andy Milligan had no idea how he was really going to end this movie, and he's just like, well, you know what, let's drop some acid and see what happens, and so there's this huge feast, and it basically just looks like a giant food orgy, and I think they're actually eating a person, though I think they reference it, but they never actually show it.
There's this weird sort of leaving the cemetery sequence just before this, where like everybody descends upon the feast, but it's the focus is like they have a filter or a lens on that makes
it's done through a fisheye lens.
Yeah, it's really weird. And it turns out that I guess the Fords are getting together to have a meeting. It was a crazy scene that caught me completely off guard.
Yeah, so we've got this big woman, this you know, who's dressed in tinsel.
Yes. That's Elizabeth.
She's really angry, and she's railing against the idea of them moving to America. You know, I'm trying to think. She has this great line where she says something like, you know, the Americans, they're the scum of the earth.
Why should we? Upon the decision of him, after all this time, decide to move to another continent. No, I will not hear of it.
Very well.
I know our bloodline is deteriorating. I know we are having problems with the police. I know we're on the verge of discovery by the entire world. I realize we must procreate a stronger breed of Ford. I realize that in order for us to survive and exist, we must make some sort of move. But to go to America, what is America? What is it made of? Pimps? Prostitutes? Religious fanatics? Thrown out of England but a few small centuries ago. They're the scum of the earth!
And everybody, you know, knocks on their table and cheers. There's really weird music playing in the background. Elizabeth kind of stands up to Algernon because she doesn't like his plan. He wants to move to America. He wants the family of Fords who have been there for 21 generations, as he's so proud of saying.
And up until this point, we hadn't really seen Algernon all that much. I mean, you hear him talking, but you don't really see him.
Yeah.
And then they finally kind of like do this reveal on Algernon, and he is wearing the craziest fucking outfit I've ever seen. Like he kind of looks like a cross between like Napoleon. If Napoleon's outfit was designed by a spaceman, whose only fabric material was your mother's drapes,
or couch,
from the 70s,
it's pretty fantastic.
It's the craziest outfit ever, and it's got like weird like silver like detail stuff on it, but it's like this weird like purple, like it's not paisley, but like almost like a paisley kind of pattern. It's so crazy.
It's like British vampire formal wear, I guess.
Because
this is their annual meeting, so he's got to dress right.
It's like vampire haute couture.
Yes, and it's kind of discovered at this point that Algernon's like we knew he was kind of the leader of the Fords or some kind of patriarch.
Yeah.
But obviously he's essentially an elected leader. And after Elizabeth rails on him, like this movie took such a weird turn at this point. Elizabeth rails on him, and then he stands up and delivers like, and her speech was very Braveheart worthy, I thought. Mm-hmm. Like it was just like this rallying of the troops.
Yeah.
And Algernon starts defending himself, and somehow the movie becomes, it's like about politics and history, and like they're delivering speeches and filibustering, and it's weird, and it's all about whether they should stay in Britain or leave. And one of the best lines actually at this point was where Algernon is talking about how difficult it is to move around London after, very specifically, after 11:30 p.m. Yeah. And that's a reason why he wants to leave, because it's become a police state. And that's when I realized this movie's like about the hardships of being a vampire in the late 60s, early 70s in the United Kingdom. Because really, that's what everything's led up to this moment.
Yep.
And they have this awesome sort of speech back and forth for the acid feast.
Yeah.
And then at the end of this, Algernon has a plan to kill Susan and Paul. He's decided he doesn't need them anymore.
Well, we forgot about Spool.
Oh, shit. Yeah, Spool. Yeah. Poor Spool.
Yeah, Spool.
I leave it here. You'll get hungry later. It's very good. I had some in the kitchen. It's very good. If you want some more pudding, I'll get you more. I had more. I had two. I like pudding.
Yeah, the poor bastard Spool. You know, he asks to go with them, and he's like, well, you know, it's not really my decision to make. Let's give it to the assembly. And basically, they do this crowd pan of the assembly, and they're all doing thumbs down and booing him, essentially. And then they eat him.
Yeah, and it's even worse, because, like, Algernon just previously was going on about how he has compassion for him.
Yeah, and then apparently not that much.
Yeah, well, Spool goes up, and he's like, so can I come, too? And Algernon's like, oh, I forgot about you. Forgot about you, Spool. He's such a bitch. And then another confused part for me was after Spool gets taken off and eaten by a bunch of laughing family members, they pan up and Algernon kind of seems legitimately upset about it. Mm. But I'm like, aren't you the king? Couldn't you have done something?
Nope.
Oh, I guess not. So Spool's gone. And now Algernon has a plan to kill Susan and Paul, which is straight out of an Agatha Christie novel.
I want her fiancé found unconscious next to her. Alicia, kill her with the same weapon as you did the maid. I want them discovered by the French windows leading out into the garden. I myself will inform the police on our departure so that they should be found together. It should look as if he has killed her.
It's like this thing where you shall go and you shall stab her with the same tools that you used to kill Anna or whatever her name is. And I want you to leave them by the back doors and open the doors so it looks like it's just this elaborate plan.
Yeah.
So it looks as though Paul killed Susan.
Ridiculous.
And there are specific travel instructions as well.
Shall be a long journey. We shall go round North America through the canal and land at California. We shall entomb ourselves at Forest Lawns, which is very lovely, I've heard. Almost as lovely as Highgate used to be at one time. Those who can help will please collect what household items of value that we have around here. The meeting is adjourned.
Do you remember that? He has, like, this...
He has a very specific idea of what needs to happen. I don't remember specifically what he says,
there will be a compartment for your carry-ons, and don't forget to arrive at the boat at 11.
He goes, and you shall do no packing, because we do not have the time.
Yeah, it's so specific. It's very gay as well. Like, he's going on about, like, how many packets you can bring and stuff.
Well, I mean, isn't time management a little gay when you think about it?
It is. You are very right. And I do have audio clips for all of these, so hopefully we'll pepper this section, because some of the best dialogue is during this feast sequence.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the ending.
Which is also really
which
weird.
Which was weird, incredibly cool. Like, my note was that it had a bit of fucked up to it.
Yeah.
Would you like
but
to describe
works.
The ending?
It
was really, it was actually really cool. Do you want to describe it, or would you like me to?
No, I'll do it. Yeah. So what happens is we cut to this shot of Susan and Paul laying dead or seemingly dead, and the camera's down on the ground with them essentially, and you can kind of see Susan's hand in the foreground, and then she starts breathing. Now I don't know if it was a matter of she's just not really good at pretending to be dead, or maybe I'm just giving the film more credit than it deserves, but she starts breathing, and then she kind of like shudders, and you know, she comes back and she pulls the needles out of her chest, and you know, and then the first thing she does is she walks over to Paul, and she looks up and you can see that there are bite marks on her neck.
Yeah.
And so then she walks over to Paul and she bites Paul. And, you know, then she kind of like stands and like stares out the window and she calls to Paul and he comes up and walks over with her. And they have this great realization that everybody's gone, that the Abbey is now theirs. And, you know, and basically the credits roll. It's the end.
It was very cool, actually. It was. I had a brief moment where I was trying to think through the movie. I was like, was this their plan all along? But I'm like, no, it couldn't have been. It couldn't have been like that deep.
Oh, no. Clearly this last bit was a total accident.
And it was a happy accident, as they like to call it. It was like,
it
almost pulled the movie together. It made the movie better.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where the ending was so good. When you go back through the rest of the movie, it's like, it was so worth it. The movie was like full of awesome dialogue and awesome strangeness. But overall, like the movie wasn't a well-written movie. The plot was kind of off. But for some reason, the ending just totally snagged me. And at the end, I was sitting there like quiet in my chair going, wow, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah. A lot of the saving grace of this film is really in those last like 5 minutes with Susan and Paul, you know, kind of like staring out the window. Because everybody else, you know, everything else in this movie is, you know, I mean, you got that dinner scene is so whacked out and doesn't make any sense. And then you got scenes with like the redhead, how she's introduced, and it makes no sense. There's just a lot of shit that doesn't make any sense in this movie. And I don't blame the movie for that because, you know, I mean, it's all Andy Milligan's fault ultimately. but he really, I mean, he really saves the entire movie with those last like 5 minutes with Susan and Paul.
I think, and it's strange. I think some of it like had to do with the setting and sort of the scenery. There was.
Well, Andy Milligan was mostly known for period pieces, you know, so like he did a lot of like, you know, the reason why most of his movies were so fucking bad. Like, I think one of his most famous and famously bad movies is called Guru the Mad Monk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a period piece. It takes place, you know, at some point in history. But like there are shots in that movie where you can see cars in the background, you know, or like you can see like the New York skyline, you know, and it's just like, you know, these guys are, I mean, this is supposed to be like Russian and in history, you know. And yeah, so Andy, that's why, I mean, Andy Milligan is really that bad. I mean, like he just doesn't take that shit into consideration. And it takes a certain amount of, you know, I don't want to say talent because I don't want to make the guy seem any better than he is because he's not good. He's really, a really bad director.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some directors out there that I can say are thoroughly misunderstood. Like I think Michael and Roberta Findlay, their movies are completely misunderstood. I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're like mad geniuses, but a lot of people think that they're just utter shit. Whereas, you know, Andy Milligan is definitely just a pile of shit. And this right here, you know, like Guru the Mad Monk is awesome for its bad qualities.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a good movie.
It's a good movie, and the part of what made that ending sequence awesome, I think, was sunrise. I guess things were just angled just the right way. There was something really eerie about the scene. The rest of the movie seemed really contrived.
Yeah.
This one seemed like it seemed very real.
Yeah, he saved, like I said, he saved the entire movie in those last 5 minutes.
And, you know, it was actually worth it because it was entertaining enough to get to those last 5 minutes.
Exactly.
So I guess that makes it a good movie.
Yeah.
So we've managed to see two good movies out of three. So one little like actual bit of trivia that I noticed while flipping through.
It gives me an excuse to use our trivia time theme song.
Go ahead. And good.
And scene.
I noticed, and it's just like a couple of quick ones, but Spool was in that movie, A Knight's Tale, the recent movie, A Knight's Tale.
That Heath Ledger movie?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which I was just so, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, that's so awesome. And Algernon was in Tootsie. So there you go.
that makes perfect sense.
So I just saw those two connections.
Weren't you also saying that that Graham had done a lot of...
Yeah, Graham seems to be one of those sort of British character actors. He'd been in The Prisoner, been in Doctor Who, and he was in the original Pink Panther movie as well. So this isn't,
yeah, that's awesome.
This isn't a movie where, like, people made this movie, and you've seen those movies where you're interested in what the actor has done, and you click it, and their IMDb basically shows that they were in that movie, and that's it. And you're like, oh, damn, they were actually good. This one, when you click the names, they've got quite an extensive roster. So Andy got a good cast for this one.
Nice,
sweet. So there you go. That's The Body Beneath in bone-chilling color.
Oh man, yeah. There's no trivia or anything listed on IMDb for this, unfortunately.
No, we just went through it. We had to find our own.
Man,
sweet. So I guess we could go through some quick shout outs and social media stuff.
Do it.
Essentially, if you are looking for us on Facebook, we do have a Facebook page, which we've mentioned extensively. Screenshots go up there for every movie, and we also chit-chat in between films. And it is facebook.com/somethingweirdpodcast. And you can find me on Twitter. It's at Potteroo. That's P-O-T-O-R-O-O. And I believe you can find Mo on Twitter as well.
At Drunk on VHS.
Sweet. And, of course, you can find this movie and other ones from the future at somethingweird.com, which is where... It's somethingweird.com, right?
Somethingweird.com.
Excellent. I didn't know if it had the video in there or not.
Nope.
Excellent. Somethingweird.com. This movie...
It's seriously one of the best websites on the net. It's... Yeah, I mean, if you're into this kind of movie... If you're into this kind of, like, film and you don't know who Something Weird is, then you should get on that.
Get on it right now. And if you'd like to check out The Body Beneath, that's where you go to grab a copy. Either a DVD or a download you can grab from the site.
But I think that's a great place to end.
Agreed.
And be sure to listen to all of the Second Unit Podcast Network shows. You can go and see all of them. It's quite literally the best podcasts on the net. It is at 2upn.blogspot. Well, I can never say that right.
Did you say splot?
Splot. I always say splot. 2upn.blogspot.com.
Nice. And you can find them on Facebook as well. Second Unit Podcast. Just do a search for it.
Yep.
Sweet. Well, it's been fun, Mo.
Always.
And I will be talking to you very soon.
Peace, y'all.